This is Morning Air.
This is about educating a people that for 40 years haven't been given the full truth. It's time now to speak the truth.
When you do things to the best of your ability, keeping Jesus number one and doing everything you possibly can for His glory, that's a winner.
You are called to make the light of Christ shine brightly in the world.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day.
This is Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for Morning Air here on Relevant Radio. Glenn in for John today. Happy to have you along. Welcome back to this short work week for most of us. Thanks so much for joining us and getting back to it here early after a long weekend. Maybe that long weekend made you think that, well, I could do with more time off, and maybe it got you daydreaming about retirement a little bit. We'll talk about what that journey is like, not financially, but maybe a little bit, mostly about what life is like, maybe moving to a new spot for retirement and changing the pace of life a little bit and finding new communities to join. That's coming up with retired school teacher Ann Flynn joins us before this hour is through. We'll have a new story corner for you as well. Want to let you know, too, on today, the Feast of the Visitation, Pope Francis has asked that all the faithful join him in praying for peace. The Holy Father will pray the rosary in front of the Ave Regina statue in Rome, asking for Our Lady's intercession for peace in Ukraine and end war worldwide. You can join Pope Francis and pray along with Catholics and Christians around the world. We'll broadcast the Holy Father's rosary live at 11 Central today here on Relevant Radio, praying for peace with the Holy Father. A good thing to do the day after we note all those who gave their lives in service of wars through the years on the side of the U.S. First off, though, we're going to take a look at the war for life and maybe a change in the battlefield with Roe v. Wade perhaps going away sometime in the next few weeks. That could be what we hear from the Supreme Court. Here to tell us more about that and take a good look at life issues and where they stand right now, longtime Morning Air guest and the executive director of Pro-Life Action Ministries, based out of St. Paul, Minnesota, but doing training and having effect around the world on sidewalk counseling in front of abortion facilities, saving well over 3,000 babies through the years. Brian Gibson joins us this morning. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Glenn. Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, always great to touch base with you and see what's going on in the world of life. Hey, first off, before we get too far removed from that long Memorial Day weekend and a day when we think of the war dead a little bit, as well as others who've passed on in our lives, not uncommon to visit cemeteries and the like, but aside from something good on the grill, anything in particular for Memorial Day traditions that you and your family partake in, Brian?
Well, getting together with the kids and the grandkids is certainly a big part of the weekend for us, so just spending time with family. And then the other big thing is getting the flowers planted around the house.
Ah, did you have success with that?
We did. In fact, here in Minnesota, we had a big storm come sweeping through the area late in the evening yesterday, and we barely got done just before the storm hit, so we got it done.
And the flowers survived the storm, did they?
Oh, yeah. We made sure that they were properly sheltered from the storm before it hit. So we're all surviving.
So you were laying down there face down in the flower bed, like covering a football for an NFL player? Is that what you're doing?
No. Well, these are more like potted plants that my wife does. She just does this amazing job. We put them on the front porch to hide them from the weather, but yeah.
Very good. Very good.
That's quite the weather you could just put for me there, though. Thank you.
Hey, just for more gardening tips, stay tuned. Anyway, hey, the weather could be changing in Washington, D.C. with news out of the Supreme Court as the court begins to kind of dole out its decisions toward the end of its session by the end of the month of June, which gets underway tomorrow, as a matter of fact. And it seems any given Monday, we expect perhaps to hear something from the Supreme Court. Of course, there's been a lot of talk and a lot of work through the years, Brian, especially by your group, among many others, to help overturn Roe v. Wade. Is that pretty much the expectation, that it will be completely overturned or thoroughly dismantled to some degree?
Well, I think the thoroughly dismantled is becoming a foregone conclusion, and that complete overturning is still the high probability that will take place. And of course, this is all based on everything from the oral arguments back in December 1st, and then, of course, this leaked Justice Alito draft of a decision, which showed at least five Supreme Court justices signing on to the complete overturning of Roe v. Wade. It would be, I think it would be shocking news at this point in time if Roe v. Wade were not completely overturned in light of those, you know, especially that draft. So, you know, it's hard to imagine that the five that were known to be voting to overturn Roe v. Wade would change their minds, even under the intense pressure that has come since that draft is leaked.
I think it's always good at this point in the ballgame, as it were, to remind people of what the likely effects would be. Even if Roe v. Wade was completely overturned, that would mean abortion goes away in large parts of the country, but by no means all parts of the country.
Currently, as the layout of the states are, because what happens is the big thing that happens is it goes back to the individual states and what their laws are regulating abortion. And as of right now, we have, I believe it's 13 or 14 states that either have trigger laws or have reverted to their previous laws prior to 1973, which would severely restrict or completely outlaw abortion. We have another group of states that would restrict abortion automatically as well because of laws on the books that would take effect. So we're looking at a total of about 26 states that are going to be restricting or severely restricting or completely outlawing abortion, if not immediately upon this decision, very shortly thereafter. And then we have states like New York and California and Washington and Oregon, Illinois, and so forth, where they have actively passed legislation protecting the killing of unborn children. And in almost every one of those states, all the way through all 9 months of pregnancy. And then you have the in-between states from there that are may have some slight restrictions for abortion and so forth, or haven't made those legal decisions yet through their legislative process. So it's just going to be a patchwork of what is going on across the country. And so here in my home state of Minnesota, we continue to do abortions, and like Illinois and New York and California, we become one of those destination states for abortion, where all the states surrounding us will either be severely restricted or not allowed. And the abortion organizations in Minnesota, as I know there in these other states as well, are already making great plans to draw women from other states to kill their unborn children.
Talking with Brian Gibson from Pro-Life Action Ministries about a post-Roe world and what that'll look like in terms of the battle for life as we continue with Morning Air here on Relevant Radio. Brian, we know that anything that disrupts the procedure of getting people from home to the abortion center can help save lives, whether it's just driving by and seeing people out praying in front of an abortion center and deciding to change their mind, or it's laws that make it very illegal, or a waiting period that make one pause and think about what's going on. But the whole idea of abortion tourism is something that we'll be facing. And so that will in some ways make it more challenging, won't it, in terms of those that have been protesting in Washington on the federal level, kind of focusing even physically with that kind of effort to now maybe be scattered over half the country.
Well, yes. And on both sides of those that are trying to protect life as we do, as well as those that want abortion to be continued in our country, the focus spreading out across the country. Now, we, of course, on the pro-life side, have long been focused on the states as well as at Washington, whereas the advocates of killing the unborn have put a lot of their eggs in the baskets of having the courts do their work for them, as well as now in recent years, Congress, or trying to get Congress in the position, as well as the White House, to do their work for them. So with the overturning of Roe, it takes it out of the courts. That's a big, huge change right there. if the U.S. Supreme Court really follows through on this, as we believe it will, the coverage that has allowed the abortion industry in the United States to thrive and grow is gone, and the allowance for the people through their representatives to say no, we don't want the killing of the unborn, now becomes the viable option, and it's going to make a complete change in just how the whole effort to end abortion from our side, or those that try to keep abortion legal from their side, that whole effort is going to change completely.
Now, it can vary. Here we have the U.S. Supreme Court. It's a court decision that could change things greatly. In different states, in some states, to change the situation for life, it's more of a legislative process, depending on how the rules and laws are written. In others, it might be more of a judicial situation. Voting for pro-life legislators certainly helps a lot, but that alone, in some cases, isn't the only thing that needs to be done.
Correct. Now, we have a situation in many states across the country where the effort by the pro-abortion organizations back, starting as early as the late 1980s, was to try and get state Supreme Courts to legalize abortion much in the same manner as the United States Supreme Court had done federally. So there are several states where they were successful. And so getting rid of the additional layer, even in states where the public may be more pro-life and you may be able to do something legislatively, you still have a state court system that you have to overcome, that same obstacle that has been, the whole nation has been dealing with Roe v. Wade. So to some degree, we have several states where that task of making legal changes is going to be layered with one more big protection by a state court system.
One of the challenges, in addition to, say, suddenly half the state's abortion is illegal, that's awesome. More resources in terms of time and money can be focused on the other states. But another challenge that will be out there, even in states where abortion is illegal, is the increased use of the abortion pill. What are some of the tactics and evolving plans for dealing with that?
Well, I think the first big one is that in those states, and again, because our FDA under the current administration has decided to basically just remove all restrictions and all regulations on the abortion pill, and it's almost a free for all in some respects with mail order abortions and internet available abortions taking place now. The individual states have to tighten up all those laws as well. Several states have already passed legislation that make it illegal to do mail order abortions. Other states have required that in-person visits must take place, and so forth. Now that doesn't stop the internet stuff from happening, but it does tighten things up. And if somebody does get caught, it does open the door for litigation and or criminal prosecution.
No, it's a term kind of from warfare, and in a sense, this is just that. But winning the hearts and minds, is that something that really becomes necessary no matter what the law is? Because people will find a way, as they have through the centuries, to get this done, and we need to have people not want to do that.
Well, exactly. That ends up being the very bottom line for everything in our nation right now. Anything cultural, anything dealing with morality, we need to win the hearts and minds of people. Of course, when it comes to the killing of the unborn, this most egregious assault on human life, we certainly have to do that. But, you know, we've been aided by all this news about the United States Supreme Court in the past few weeks. When this leak draft came out, all of a sudden the mainstream media, who regularly blocks the messages of pro-life Americans from Americans, were putting forward messages that were coming from us because they had to keep a balance, or at least a pretense of balance, with all the other news that they were putting out from the abortion side of things. So a prime example is there was an abortion rally outside our Planned Parenthood in St. Paul, Minnesota, Several of us went out there to go counter demonstrate, and we had these big, beautiful signs, a picture of an unborn baby with the words, "I am human," on them. And that ended up being in all the major media in our local market, which they never, I got to tell you, Glenn, in almost 40 years, they never put our signs on the news, but they put them in the news and in the newspapers from that event. So we're starting to see that that now that this is a whole big new news item for the major media, that even when they don't want our message to go forward, they're allowing our message through.
Now, one thing that we can take advantage of, those fighting for life, is things like this bring up the conversation in the public sphere, in the media, on the sidewalks out there, and also in our own private conversations, things that can bring up that conversation about life. How can we be better prepared as average citizens to talk a little bit of a pro-life talk?
Well, there are several books that have come out in recent years that are just phenomenal in this area that has been it's coined the phrase pro-life apologetics. Stephanie Gray is one who has it. Scott Klusendorf is another. Several authors have put together these very good books that help people understand the issues and how to respond. And the how to respond is the big thing. It's really, the issue is simple and clean for us. We know that this is a human being. So how do we deal with, or how do we respond when we get the core arguments of the abortion movement, you know, sexual assault, fetal deformity, life or health of the mother? You know, those are the three big ones. And then everything from there on out that they like to throw at us. And these authors have put together this information. They're absolutely phenomenal. There's some great websites out there, Live Action. Liveaction.org. They've got some great stuff. We have a little bit on our own website, but yes, it's very important that people take the time. We need to still be gracious. We still need to be kind. We need to respond with a measured tone, but we need to respond, and we need to be ready to respond with the truth and in a way that is acceptable for the people around us.
In addition to opportunities to converse more about the life issue, when we mentioned the fuss, calling it lightly, you mentioned being out there in the face of protest in the wake of that leak of the Supreme Court likely decision that came out. Any concerns literally about life on the street for those that are out there doing the sidewalk counseling or various protests that might pop up in terms of dealing with violence or expecting that in terms of a country that increasingly turns to violent protest?
Well, I think no. In one respect, no. My response to that is, so far, certainly where I'm at. Now I know there have been incidences, and we hear about these in the news, and we see some of the graffitiing of buildings and even actual vandalism of other buildings that have taken place. But I think part of that is they're isolated. There still have been very infrequent things like this happening in very rare places around the country. Even so far as it has increased, it's still very infrequent and rare. On the streets, life on the streets for us, and as we keep a pulse from other places around the country where other sidewalk counselors are at, we are not hearing anything of an increase of threats or violence or anything. But at the same time, we have to be aware. We got to be careful. We got to take good precautions that are prudent and right. And so, we take those steps. We've added additional information in our training for people to be aware and to know what to do if something were to occur, and so forth. So, it's. Not much different than it normally is for us on the street so far, but we're taking precautions.
We talk a lot about life issues on this network all across the country all through the years, and we want to make sure that it's not just a matter of preaching to the choir, you know, don't do this, knowing you not you shouldn't do this. But to take a moment to talk about the hope and healing side of thing, as we know, so many folks, even up and down the pews in any given church, any given Sunday, have been part of the abortion process on one side or the other and really wish they hadn't. A few thoughts on chances for hope and healing in places like Rachel's Vineyard.
Oh, absolutely. The post-abortion counseling programs, as we call them, are just absolutely vital. You know, we're coming off close to 50 years of having Roe versus Wade in place, where abortion has been all across the United States. Then we have a handful of states additionally that had started making abortion legal in the mid to late 1960s. And so with all these years, with the large number of abortions that have taken place, there are a lot of wounded women, a lot of wounded men, a lot of wounded siblings, and so forth in our country. And the need for healing is great and is going to be a big part of dealing with this whole issue going forward. And Rachel's Vineyard's a phenomenal organization for people to reach out to and get that healing that that they may need.
Excellent. We want people to really be aware of that and know that through Christ there is hope and healing. And what happened at some point in the past is not the only story. And I imagine you've been able to stand shoulder to shoulder with so many that have gone through that and become great pro-life warriors through the years.
Well, some of our best active sidewalk counselors are post-abortive women. And because they can speak from personal experience to the women that they're trying to address as those women are seeking their abortions. And we find that in a lot of different areas. You know, Glenn, I think, you know, the large number of women who are Christians, Catholic or of other denominations, who have had abortions over the years, tells us that there's a lot of work to be done in all these areas, both the healing that comes in Jesus Christ through reconciliation, through forgiveness that comes in the sacrament as well, but then also going back to the very message of getting people to understand the truth, to know who that human being is, and to live accordingly. And so again, the work ahead of us is still immense. The fact that Roe v. Wade may be overturned or is overturned by the end of June is not going to change the amount of effort that we still need to put in all over the nation to try and win the hearts and minds of Americans.
Well, Brian, blessings on your continued work of saving those young lives. We appreciate that so much. You're a good example for all and always a great guest as well. Find out more. Pro-Life Action Ministries at PLAM.org. Brian Gibson joining us this morning. More right around the corner. We'll talk with relatively new retiree Ann Flynn about what life is like in that world, and also someone who spent a lot of time in the classroom talking about what it might be like to see the news from Texas last week and imagine that a bit as well. That's all coming up as we continue with Morning Air, plus a new story corner on the way here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Get connected to the conversation. Call us now at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. You're listening to Morning Air with John Morales.
Good morning, Glenn, in for John today. Thanks so much for joining us for Morning Air here on Relevant Radio. New story corner coming up before the hour is through. Today on the Feast of the Visitation, Pope Francis has asked all the faithful to join him in praying for peace. The Holy Father will pray the rosary in front of the Queen of Peace statue in Rome, asking for Our Lady's intercession for peace in Ukraine and an end to war worldwide. You can join Pope Francis and pray along with Catholics and Christians around the world. We'll broadcast the Holy Father's Rosary live today at 11 Central. It's 11 Central. Pray the Rosary for peace along with Pope Francis here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. As we continue the day after that long weekend, we're all kind of stretching and getting back to it. We thank you for joining us bright and early. Joining us bright and early, not far from the beach. Who knows? Maybe she's out there, you know, fighting the seagulls for some snacks this morning in beautiful Florida. Ann Flynn, a longtime school teacher and not infrequent guest here on Morning Air, joins us today. Good morning, Ann, from beautiful Florida. How are things today?
Oh, good morning, Glenn. Happy Feast of Visitation. What a great day. You got to come down and visit, speaking of visitations.
Yes, yes, that's a great plan. That's a great plan, and that, Lord willing, will happen indeed. Enjoy your new digs. I want to talk about that a little bit, the whole transition in life. And it's not just as school teachers send those kids out the door in so many places this week from one grade to the next, but we're talking about kind of the adult advancing to the next grade in retirement a little bit. But Ann, kind of before we get into the happy stuff of that, just being that you spent over two decades teaching second grade, I just had to get your take on the sad news out of Texas, and it's not the first school shooting that we've seen, one of the worst, certainly, but as a teacher, especially the last several years before retirement, that had to be in the back of your mind, and even going so far as, you know, having to talk to little kids about that. Back in the day, we had those, you know, nuclear war drills that weren't very effective, I think, to go and sit with your head down in the middle of the gym just in order to, I don't know, give the concrete blocks a head start to travel from a couple stories down, as opposed to eventually doing drills where we were under our desk. But what, when you hear that sad news, you see that it's hard to avoid. I imagine you can't help but, you know, imagine yourself in the classroom for a moment.
Oh, you do. It brings you right back. We did have all of those same drills. You know, it's the tornado drills, the fire drills. But sadly, having to add active shooter drills to your repertoire is not, it's not a pleasant thing. And especially with the really little ones, they don't know. They don't get it. They just think it's fun to hide in the closet. You know, it's very, very difficult. So, yeah, it's, I did check in with some of my teacher friends upon hearing the news to make sure everyone was okay, because it is, kind of a slap and a reality. You know, a lot of people go to their jobs not having to even think about this, but we do as teachers. And but, you know, there's also something about being a protector. I never, ever even questioned how I would react. I was really blessed to participate, actually, in a active shooter drill that our local police force did in our school building. It was in the evening. They used blanks. There was, like, dead bodies everywhere, not real ones, of course, but some real people that were playing dead and some people and dummies that were laying on the stairs and that kind of thing. And it was a fascinating thing to see as a teacher, you know. I think one of my favorite things about teaching was learning. You know, you learn so much from the little people and all of their experiences, and then having these men and women from our local police force and the fire department as well came and trained in our building. Just so to see how they worked through that was amazing. Very frightening, but I guess I was more fascinated and wanted to learn it. I'm actually pointing out to some of the guys, like, no, you shouldn't do that. Don't ever open a door like that. And it was kind of funny. Maybe I watched too much, you know, CSI or something. But it's it was fascinating to watch it in progress and how quickly they were responding, but how long it felt, you know, as you're listening to the shots and then listening for the sirens that come later. It's amazing how long that feels when it's really only like 2 minutes.
Well, and sadly, the story coming out that it went a very, very long time in Texas at the school in Uvalde, up to almost an hour in the classroom for those kids. And, you know, we can't imagine what it's like to lose a child at any age, and especially in something as public and tragic as that, kids that were so young. But just trying to imagine for a moment the survivors, and we heard, we won't get into detail, but the survivors, you know, some of the things they did to hide, to call 911 in the midst of all of this, and to have it go on as long as it did. And the thought, and too, that I had, these were fourth graders, and, you know, granted the whole school had to scram, but the classroom most affected fourth graders, and thinking, well, they're not too little, or they just might never remember this. They're old enough to remember this and be shaped. For any kind of trauma, let alone something as just, you know, once in a lifetime like this, but how can we help little kids move on? To what degree can we? Is that even possible?
Well, I think first and foremost, we all need to be praying for these children, for their families. They have a lot to recover from, and we have to remember too, the parents of these children, the trauma that they're going through, knowing that their child went through this, you know, the guilt that they're going to feel about not being there to protect their child, there's going to be a lot of hurt and a lot of agony over the next many, many years. Some won't recover, some will. And that is, to me, I have always been fascinated by how different family units, how different individuals process through these things. And having to show compassion for any way of how they show it, whether it's stoically or the massive breakdowns, just to be respectful of how each individual processes through that. Any kind of grief, any kind of tragedy or trauma, just to be respectful of all the different ways that people will have to go through this. But prayer is going to be, of course, the most important thing. And I know that, you know, a lot of these people are pushing back on that. Oh, prayer, that gets you nowhere. Yes, it does, actually. and if we didn't have it, just think where we would be, right?
Oh, amen to that. Amen to that. And you spent over 20 years teaching in Catholic schools, and that's an added tool to help kids recover, is to be able to be in a situation where faith can be talked about, where you can pray right there in the classroom, where, you know, if a kid is really, really struggling, or if you are, say, if you had to be a teacher in this situation in the wake of that, and granted, this came at the end of the school year, but to be able to pray with kids, to have them be able to go to Mass regularly, and, you know, we think of, well, how can we stop this? Well, what are some good things we can do along the way? And that's, you know, having prayer be part of the school day, as can happen in Catholic schools.
Well, they say over and over again, all these problems started when we started taking prayer and the prayer of and the Pledge of Allegiance out of our school day. You know, and that's one of the blessings that we have in the Catholic school, where I was so fortunate to have been able to spend my career in that environment, where when there were issues, we could kneel down and pray right then and there. You know, a little child would come to school and they'd be upset that day because, oh, maybe their grandmother had passed away, or even their dog for that matter. You can give it to God right away. And it's amazing, because the kids around you, that they pick up on this and they pray, and it's real. And we know the Lord listens to those children before they listen to us adults, right? Mm-hmm. And so to catch them when they're young and give them a strong faith, good prayer life from the get-go, I think is so important. And like I said, you can see the results of taking that out of these schools.
And too, one of the things, and it, you know, obviously for any kids in that school, or many watching it for that matter, might be really shaken for quite some time to come. Again, being 10 years old, having to go through this in your school, in your classroom, losing your classmates perhaps, will leave an indelible impact. But can we take a little bit of heart, if not as much in this situation, but certainly other situations, about the resilience of kids?
Definitely. They are resilient. They never cease to amaze me how they can bounce back from these tragedies. And, you know, you don't know. Maybe God in his infinite wisdom has chosen one of those children that were in that situation to come up with a solution that's going to protect kids in the future. You don't know. We don't know what his plan is in that regard. We have to find some good in this. And I know it's difficult, and it's easy for me to say, it sounds so trite, but there is something greater here at work in these tragedies. I almost like to see if people could go back to some of these other previous shootings and interview some of these kids and where they're at now, because some of them are grown-ups at this point, and maybe, you know, talk to them and see how it has impacted their life. I'd like to hear those stories and see about that resiliency and how it's played out in their lives. Maybe they've become proactive in certain areas that are good for, you know, the future of training teachers or whatever. I mean, there's a lot to this issue. I don't want to get into all of it, and it can get kind of political. But I think we can find good in even the most awful evil. I think we can find it, and I pray every day that one of those kids is going to come up with a solution.
Well, in addition to being able to teach the three R's of right and reading, writing, and arithmetic, and teaching kids how to pray and have their first reconciliation and all of that, we always appreciate your wisdom in so many areas, Anne. And we're going to take a quick break, and then we promise to get back to original topic A. But we appreciate your wisdom on this situation. But we'll talk about retirement life and adults graduating to the next grade when we continue next with more of Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. Underway now with the unofficial start of summer with Memorial Day weekend, about summer vacation plans and some that didn't maybe go according to plan, and they actually end up making the best memories. Kim Morgan joins us in the next hour to talk about that as well. But now getting back to it with retired teacher Ann Flynn, who's joining us today once again, and had a little chat about things down in Texas. But Ann, the idea in having you on was to talk about you graduating from one grade in adult life to the next, and that's graduating off to retirement. You've had a few months and actually most of a school year to contemplate that. Now, how is that shift going? Do you feel like you've graduated to that next grade?
Oh, my goodness. Not yet. This has probably been the fastest year of my life. I'll have been retired 1 year coming up here in June 15th, and I'd never know it. life is very busy. And by the way, I highly recommend retirement. It's fantastic. It's just totally different. But I have to say, with the transition, I did not just, retire and leave my classroom, which, by the way, this was fun. Fun fact, I left my classroom to a former student.
That is just a beautiful story, by the way. That, yeah.
It made my transition so much better and richer and more rewarding to know that a former student of mine had taken my place in the classroom. So that was a joyful moment. But yeah, it's been different. I've been very busy because not only did we leave my classroom, but we left our home of 30 years and moved 1,500 miles away. And so going through all of that stuff, having to clear out 20 years of classroom life and clearing out 30 years of home life, it was pretty difficult, actually. There's a lot of moments, where you just start weeping as you're tossing things. Do I save this little flower someone made for me 6 years ago? It's tricky, but it's been good. Like I said, the schedule's very different. I get to sleep in a little bit, but the best thing is I get to go to daily mass, and I think that was always our goal. And we bought a home that is within walking distance of our church. So that was always also a goal of mine, to be able to walk to church in the morning.
And, you've had some pretty good plans here. How long before you actually retired had the planning started in terms of, planning a move to maybe a more hospitable climate? planning to be in a spot where, it wouldn't be just sleeping in and golfing, but it would be able to go to daily mass, and then better yet, to walk to daily mass. How long was that in the planning?
That was 3 years in the planning. And it was a arduous process because we were, when you're in Minnesota and you're trying to move to Florida, and one of the biggest reasons, of course, is we have grandchildren down here. So we wanted to be able to, be there for them. And so we actually found a home, buying a house sight unseen during the market where we were at too. It would be a seller's market, but trying to find a home, it was very difficult because you would literally have 2 hours, something would go list and it would be gone. And being so far away, it made it very difficult. We had actually bought a home sight unseen, flew down here to actually see it, realized it wasn't for us. So, you know, we had to sacrifice some, you know, earnest money and that kind of thing. So that made it kind of tricky. And then you get burned a couple of times and you're like, eh. So we ended up going with a builder and building a home. And that is also a difficult process, long distance, very difficult, very scary. But we're here and we're settling in, and it's been good. And like I said, the goal was to be able to walk to church, and we have. Now, when it gets too hot here, might drive, but that's next on the list as we get closer to summer down here. That was another transition too, going from Minnesota to a Florida climate. My plants are lovely.
Well, you know,
I did bring my plants down.
We could maybe invite listeners as well to send you some refrigerated packages of snow during certain times of the year, just in case you get too homesick for that. You know, we can throw snowballs at you through the Postal Service, perhaps. We'd be happy to do that.
The only snowballs I want right now, the only snowballs I want right now are the ones down the street by the beach where the guy's got the little shack of a snowball.
Yeah, the snow cones are awesome. My favorite from county fairs through the years. But it's good to have that plan. Now, was there, you know, and granted, with all the work to be done and it, with the move and kind of restarting a new area, I know for me, when I got done with school finally and was just in the world of work doing radio, which I'd been longing to do, but I didn't have homework. And it was like, it took a while. I just enjoyed that, I think, for a couple of months, just of working and not having homework. And, you know, now doing talk radio, of course, there is homework to be done a little bit to plan for the next show and whatnot, but not so much with music radio. And I just enjoyed that. Did you have a period of just kind of, whew, and maybe this is even before the move, but like, I don't have to get up and go to work. I don't have to, you know, on those lesson plans late into the night at home. I don't have to go out and buy school supplies, as much as I'd love to see the smiles on kids' faces getting them with my own money. And just to, was just relaxing a little bit part of the initial plan?
Absolutely. I did. I just took some time off and just did absolutely nothing. I think I actually stared at a wall for a while. I just... You're so go, go, go. And my husband teases me all the time. It's like, what? You're not up. It's not, you know, he's used to having me gone before he even wakes up. I'm already in my classroom and starting my day. The alarm went off at 5 o'clock every morning. And, you know, there were times I would go to work in the dark and come home in the dark and didn't see much of the daylight all day long. And so it's, you know, enjoying some sunrises and some sunsets has been wonderful. I will admit. It's been very different. The only downside that I have is, as a teacher, you plan, and you plan sometimes weeks in advance. And being a Catholic school teacher, I was very in tune with what was coming up liturgically for the year. For example, the Feast of, you know, the Visitation today. I would have planned out a lesson for this, where we would have actually gone to visit, you know, over at church. But I, you know, it was one of those things where last night before bed, we pray the daily prayers for the day before. And I'm like, oh, it's a visitation already? When did that happen? I'm just not prepared like I used to be. So that's been a little me bad, you know, kind of thing, where I should be more in tune with what's coming up liturgically for, you know, preparation for your heart, your soul, your day. You know, like I said, we do get to daily mass, but sometimes we'll be at mass and it's like, oh, it's so-and-so's feast day. And I didn't even think about it. Whereas I would have been planning weeks in advance for it usually. So that's been a change.
Well, at least not being a student, you're not getting marked down for not being prepared for that necessarily. So that
True.
Is good.
I'm
now you've mentioned the importance of a spiritual life, both as a teacher for those little kids, but as part of the planning for physically where you'd be retirement-wise. But how big a transition has that been to join a new parish after many years?
That has been a mixed blessing. You know, when you are a teacher at the school and the parish where you practice your faith as well, you get to be known really well. And so there's a blessing and a curse with that. you know, you have to kind of live up to a little higher standard. You have to kind of watch everything you
yeah,
do and say.
Yeah.
Where here, there's a little more anonymity, and I can, you know, just kind of be casual observer. And I don't have all of these people coming up to me all the time. So it's kind of nice in that way. But at the same time, I kind of miss it, you know. It's nice to be acknowledged for who you are and what you do for the school and the parish. So we haven't quite found our niche yet, what we're going to do with our time and talent and treasure yet. You know, it's wide open right now. Do I want to work for the pro-life center here? Should we, you know, spend time subbing at the Catholic school? What am I going to do with my time now? Because I do have some coming up here. Once we get a little more settled, we'll have to face that and determine what we want to do and for our vocation. You know, my vocation is now vacation.
Not a bad one for a while, for sure. Now, with working from home, the line between working and retirement can blur a little bit more, including being able to work from different parts of the country as well. Was this set up with your husband retiring at the same time, or is that more of a gradual thing for him?
Well, he actually went when we moved down in about February. And I sent him back to Minnesota. He had to continue to work. And we were waiting to hear from his company whether or not they could get him settled here in Florida. But because of, I think, tax issues and whatever, they could not move him down here. He couldn't work from home down here. So he did retire. And that would be a whole nother show, having both the husband and wife retire at the same time or near the same time. You know, when you're used to doing your separate lives and then all of a sudden it's 24/7, you're together. That's a whole nother show, seriously.
We have heard the phrase mostly from guys that, retirement, you know, don't rush into retirement. Retirement is half the income and twice the spouse or something like that. So, but I'm sure twice the amount of time with you would be just fine.
He is absolutely loving it.
Oh, that is good. That is good. And we know with his aviation background, see the Blue Angels flying around once in a while probably isn't a bad sight as well. Just about a minute left to go, Ann. We appreciate your insight both on the school situation in Texas as well as making that big switch to the retirement grade as an adult as well. But any parting wisdom in the last 30 seconds for our listeners who might be planning ahead and looking forward to that day of not turning off the alarm clock, but not even having to set it?
Oh, retire as soon as you can. If there's any regret that we would have, is not doing this sooner. And I know there's financial things, you know, for a lot of people, and we are, we're going to be stressed about that. But trust God, do it, take that leap of faith. If there's any way to do it sooner, because you hear so many sad stories about people who retire and shortly thereafter pass, and it's like, relish the time that you have. Work hard. If you are working, work hard, give it your all, give it to God, give it for these children, give it for, you know, these people that are suffering. Make it efficacious, make your daily work efficacious. And then when you do retire, enjoy it and give that to God too. And you have extra prayer time to give to these children too. And those that are suffering, don't forget the suffering souls in purgatory either.
Well, thank you, Ann. As always, great to chat with you and get your wisdom and insight, blessings on that next stage in life, and look forward to touching base on a variety of topics before long as well. Time now for today's Story Corner here on Relevant Radio. And as we come off the Memorial Day holiday weekend, one more to remember. Our story today by John Logan on establishing Decoration Day in 1868. We should guard their graves with sacred vigilance. All that the consecrated wealth and taste of the nation can add to their adornment and security is but a fitting tribute to the memory of her slain defenders. Let no wanton foot tread rudely on such hallowed grounds. Let pleasant paths invite the coming and going of reverent visitors and fond mourners. Let no vandalism of avarice or neglect, no ravages of time testify to the present or coming generations that we've forgotten as a people the cost of a free and undivided republic. If other eyes grow dull and other hands slack and other hearts cold in the solemn trust, ours shall keep it well as long as the light and warmth of life remain in us. Let us then at the appointed time gather round their sacred remains and garland the passionless mounds above them with the choicest of flowers of springtime. Let us raise above them the dear old flag they saved from dishonor. Let us in this solemn presence renew our pledges to aid and assist those whom they left among us a sacred charge upon the nation's gratitude, the soldiers and sailors, widow and orphan. In 1 John 3:16, we know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers and sisters. That's our story today. You can find it again in podcast form on the Relevant Radio app. More of Morning Air coming up right around the corner here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.